I'm David Schreiner-Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Daniel Jordy. Daniel is Managing Director of LeadersBridge.org, a catalyst that connects leaders and organizations for partnership, investment, and board opportunities. He's on a mission to bring humanity back into business by creating a global business ecosystem where people do business with each other underneath an umbrella of shared values. Since Daniel started the company in 2013, he has enabled more than 20 million Swiss francs in new business value by connecting what belongs together. Daniel, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, David.
Daniel, how has the demise of the industrial age impacted the plateaus that leaders need to smash?
I think, so the way I look at it is, as we were in the industrial age, a lot of people were very individualistic. So they tried to solve problems by themselves because everybody was a competitor around them. That was kind of like the thinking. So we had that old school thinking. And now as we're transitioning into that new economy, I call it the conscious economy. I think we have a different way of looking at problems and solving problems because we have a different mindset of people. So you, like in the past, most things seemed to have been business problems. Today, we more and more understand that every business problem is nothing but a personal problem in disguise, to quote one of my smart mentors that I worked with in the past. And if that's true, if most business problems are nothing but personal problems in disguise, then I very much believe that the way to solve them is not in isolation, but through collaboration. So that's the way I look at the difference between the industrial economy and the conscious economy.
Do you find that people are resistant to the idea that they really need to collaborate to solve problems?
Some are and others are not. And I think it's a generational thing a little bit. So usually when I work with corporate executives, with CIOs, CTOs, people like that, from large corporations, they are much more hesitant because they see most people as just competitors. So they're very careful about, you know, sharing anything or being out there or even, you know, having a picture taken of them or being filmed at an event or something like that. But when I work with entrepreneurs, that is an entirely different mentality because as an entrepreneur, especially in today's day and age, there is no way in hell you can be successful on your own. And it's been true in the past as well. But the thinking in the past was you just do it by yourself and everybody has to follow you. And today it doesn't work anymore like that. If you want people to follow you, you need to lead by example and you need to focus on creating other leaders instead of creating followers. So it really depends on who you're talking to. The way I look at it is, or from my experience, when you talk to even the younger generation, so I'm 32 right now. And when I talk to younger generation, like 25-year-old people, they have an incredibly different mindset than even I have. But then when I talk to, you know, compare them to people in their 40s or 50s, it's like a different world because the younger generation, they look at everybody as just somebody else to play with in business. And I'm fascinated by that.
Now, for younger people who look at everyone else as somebody to play with in business, do you see that also permeates the large organization world?
I think it does. So there's that, you know, whole thing with the millennials and, you know, you can't manage them and you know, they don't really want to get a job and things like that. I think it's not about looking at the different generations or like, you know, large corporations and then, you know, the younger generation and something like that as separate things, because I don't believe that when you have things separate, magic happens. I believe magic happens when you put two different worlds together that can work under the same umbrella. So I think that really, I mean, the younger generations and the whole energy and the passion and drive they have has immense value in today's maybe a little bit stuck corporate world if the two generations agree to work with each other.
Interesting. Now, what's an example of a business problem that you've seen that is really a personal problem in disguise?
So usually it is one example was with an IT company here in Switzerland, and they've grown very, very fast. So they became from a startup, really small company, they became big really, really, really quickly. And the CEO was in a position where he hit that plateau, he hit that ceiling where he couldn't grow the company any further. And even if he hired people for, you know, global business development and things like that, or more technical people, the company wouldn't grow. And he thought it's a business problem because maybe the processors weren't optimized. Maybe there is like the wrong people are in the company or something like that. But when he looked deeper, he realized that he is the problem because he was always the bottleneck of the company. The decision basically then for him, the first step was to realize that. And that was really hard for him because in that position, usually people do not want to realize that they're the bottleneck because they have their ego and everything. But he realized that he is the bottleneck. And for the company's sake, he made the decision and he said, I'm going to hire a CEO because then I can do what I do best. But because this guy was not a manager, and in that company, the role or a large part of the role of the CEO was actually to manage the company, the operations, the performance and everything. And that was totally against his genius. So what he decided is hire a CEO from another company and become the chief visionary officer, where he could just be inventing and just being that creator again and drive the company's growth like that. And since then, the plateau has been gone, basically, and he's in that most natural role again.
Well, yeah, and I imagine it takes a lot of humility to be able to have that kind of reflection, to realize as the person, and was he the founder of the company?
Yes.
Right, as somebody who's the founder, to realize that an organizational structure that worked for you as the founder works only up to a certain point, and that in order to get beyond that plateau, as you've described it, which was based on size, a different kind of structure, particularly a different kind of leader, is needed to be able to grow the infrastructure beyond that.
And, you know, and one point about that, because sometimes, you know, these CEOs and founders, they think that when they hire another CEO, they need to leave the company, right? Because there's, you know, they're CEO, there's no higher position for them to take, right? Maybe on the board, but that's not very active. And for him, that was really the tipping point, because he realized that he, you know, I mean, he got his ego out of the way for, you know, I have to be the CEO of this to be the highest, you know, person in the company. And he just accepted that he has a much, much bigger impact on the company if he's the chief visionary officer. So I think that is an important thing as well.
Mm. And for somebody who's in that role, who realizes, at least certainly observes the symptoms that the growth has been stymied, that it seems to have flattened out, are there particular action steps that somebody like that can take to try to identify what the causes are of the problem and how to solve it?
Absolutely. I mean, from my experience, usually the problem is there and it stays there if they keep looking inside the company. So if they keep just having that inside perspective, usually nothing changes because, well, the only thing they see is themselves and the company from the inside. And usually the change happens when they go outside and they start having conversations with other peers on their level. And eventually they're going to meet somebody who is a peer that is no longer the CEO of their own company. And they go like, what do you mean you're not the CEO of your own company? And then, you know, in that specific example, that is also what happened. So I think it's really about going to places, and that may be physical places or in some other way, but going to places where you can meet those kinds of peers that seem to have solved a similar problem that you had, because it's almost like role modeling and really understanding how did they do it. I mean, that's from my experience, that is the most effective way, because in that one step, you have everything together. You realize that you actually have a problem because you see other people being further ahead and having solved it. You accept that there is a solution, and you're also able to tap into that solution directly.
So let's break this down a little bit. So if you're suggesting that a CEO like that needs to bring some outside perspective into the company, it strikes me that there are a few different ways to do this. One is he could hire a coach. Another one is he could hire a consultant or a consulting team. Another is he could have some informal discussions with peers. Another possibility is he could join a structured peer support group or peer support network and learn from the shared experiences of his colleagues. What are your thoughts about those different kinds of options? And maybe there are others that you know that I've left out of that list.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with all of these options, and I think they're all valid. And they're all, like, depending on which one to pick from, it depends on the stage of the company, depends on the level of consciousness of the person, of the CEO, of the founder. Because if that person is not ready for coaching, it doesn't make any sense to engage a coach. Maybe they're, you know, depending on what you understand on the coaching or consulting, but maybe they're just ready to engage a consulting team to do some research internally in the organization of what the problem may be. Maybe it's that stage. Maybe they're ready to completely go out, you know, and share and be vulnerable and join a peer-to-peer group. So all of those are valid depending on the state, like the season of the company, and also depending on the mindset or the current stage of the mindset of the founder or the CEO.
Mm-hmm. So as the CEO, what would you need to ask yourself to know which stage you're at and to know what you're ready for?
I would ask myself, what am I comfortable with right now or confident with right now to learn about, like, the organization and what's going on? Because some people may not be ready yet to learn that they are the bottleneck. It usually there's a huge difference between knowing and understanding, because you can know something, but it can take you a year to actually understand it. So I think that's an important question. Like, what am I confident with right now to learn about my organization so I can move forward. I can break through that plateau. And also, I guess the main question after that would be, what access to resources and capabilities do I think I need in order to break through?
Mm-hmm. And based on the answer about access to resources, what are some of the possible paths?
Well, it really depends on where the CEO stands. But if he says, okay, the main resources I need or the main capability I need is somebody to just help me figure out what my problem is, you know, and then they may be at the level where they understand, okay, they are the problem. So, for example, hiring a coach makes a lot of sense. But they maybe say, okay, I need resources to understand what the potential is for an expansion to China, and they need completely different resources. And then maybe, you know, a more business-focused peer-to-peer group makes sense to access those kinds of resources for, you know, from best practices and connections into those markets.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Now going back to your thought about this collaborative environment, what kinds of structures do you think really foster this kind of conscious collaboration?
So I've been part of countless peer-to-peer groups. I have worked with countless coaches and mentors. And from my experience, for that model to work, a peer-to-peer group is one of the most effective ways, but it has to be structured in the right setting. Because sometimes, you know, you have those informal meetups or something like that that are nice. Maybe it's a small group, but usually you don't have the quality of people there that can really help you with something. Maybe they just all want something from you because, you know, you're the CEO. And then there's conferences, right, with 500 people. Very often they're more shallow, and it's really hard to get any work done at an actual conference. So what I found, my experience is the perfect setup is a group of 20 to 30 people that get together regularly, and that have formal and informal exchanges. So to give you an example of what we're running, basically there's two initiatives that we're running. One of them is a private gathering, which is completely informal. It's nothing but a group of 20 people gathered in a bar over afterward drinks. And what really makes that unique is the kinds of people that come there. So it's really those CEO types, those CXO types. And what also makes it unique is the size of the group. Because if you go for 20 people, you can walk into a room and after 2 hours walk out and know everyone and have a relatively good relationship already with everyone because you had the chance to exchange. And also it's much, much easier to make sure that when 20 people get there, they're all aligned underneath that same umbrella of shared values. And that is the informal setting that I think is incredibly effective because you can go there and you can exchange with your peers with no pressure, with no specific agenda. And usually when you don't have a specific agenda, there's more innovative insights that you get out of that. The other one is the more formal structure, which we run as a CEO collaboration day, which is a 1 day event with 20 to 30 participants around specific roundtables. So topics like emerging technologies, digitalization, leadership and culture, and things like that, globalization, and like holistic view of the issues of CEOs and organizations. And what we do is we have a very, very specific structure there that we run them through at the roundtable. So they could depict the roundtables they either need insights and connections from, or they can provide insights and connections too. So there's the giving and the receiving aspect built into it. And then at the round table, what we do is we facilitate and moderate the conversations towards an outcome where at the end of the round table, everybody has their needs met on paper. So basically everybody walks out with, you know, with the action steps, with the insights, with the connections from that table they need to go and solve their challenges and accelerate their growth. And then what we do on an event level is we have people take notes on each of those challenges and each of the details, because then we go out and match and connect the people cross sector from, you know, the other round tables and even with the larger community. So these are two structures that are, one of them is informal, one of them is formal, that have worked wonders. I mean, that's where the 20 million in new business value comes from. And that's, you know, I just use that because money is a nice way of measuring impact in some sense, but there's so many more things that came out of this than just the money.
Yeah, the relationships are everything.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure both of these structures foster relationships.
That's the key thing, yeah.
Daniel, what have you seen that might be similar to these two structures, the private gathering and the CEO roundtable, that may have similar kind of impact for people who are lower down the level of hierarchy in the organization, like let's say middle managers?
So, well, unfortunately, there's not a lot out there that I know for middle managers in that sense. Because usually it's a more difficult setup because, like, what can you share about the company? What can you not? So it makes everything a lot more difficult to actually handle and organize and run. But, I mean, what I would suggest on a middle management level is either create your own group in a non-competing environment. So, you know, you probably have colleagues in other companies and get together with them. And you know, if that's your talent, then create something yourself. Or find a structure that already exists, like meetups is great, but like there's a lot of very, very invaluable meetups out there as well. So find the kind of place that is really dedicated to what your greater vision is as well. So if you want to advance, you know, in like artificial intelligence, and that is the main thing you want to advance in, then don't go to any kind of leadership meetups or something like that, but focus on that specific passion and that specific topic that you want to develop in so that you meet others who have the same passion. Because usually the more specific you go, the more passionate people you find.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess overall what I'm hearing you saying is that for leaders and managers to excel, they really need to be conscious about being lifelong learners.
Absolutely, yeah, and not just in an isolated environment, because we can be, you know, we can learn from all the online programs and like there's countless online universities right now. But what I see the problem with that is like really the human interaction, like face to face. Video calls are great, but in fact, there's nothing right now that replaces face to face. Maybe virtual reality will replace it at one point, but I'm not so sure about that.
Right. Then, yeah, there's nothing quite like live human connection.
Exactly.
Daniel, whom do you know personally who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
So one guy that I got to know just a couple of months ago is the CEO of an artificial intelligence company. And I mean, when I interviewed the guy a couple of weeks ago, and I mean, what stood out to me when he shared his story was that he did nothing but smash plateaus, because I mean, what they do in their company is so outrageous and so out there that like nobody believed in them at all. And almost nobody believed in them. Everybody thought they're crazy what they're trying to accomplish. Now they're incredibly successful and they're looked at as a pioneer in artificial intelligence. But when they got started 10 years ago, I mean, everybody looked at them as just like totally crazy weirdos. Some of the plateaus that he had to overcome is, you know, self-doubt, which is a huge one. And then also going out there and instead of trying to persuade others that this is the right thing, going out there and just rigorously keep sharing his vision of where it's going, where he's going. And instead of trying to persuade others to follow him, just walk the path and have that fierce faith that others will follow him. And that's what he did. And that's what happened.
Well, it takes a lot of courage to do that and a lot of determination to pursue that path, particularly if it takes a long time for people to start following.
Absolutely, yeah. But, you know, the rewards are also exponential because, I mean, they carved out an entire niche within artificial intelligence that nobody can match them with. So they are the total number one leaders in that space right now because they literally created it.
That's great. Daniel, what do we have to look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up?
So right now we're in the process of launching that CEO collaboration day for November in Switzerland, in Zurich. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And another thing that we're getting started right now is an initiative we call the Access Panel, which is basically the virtual equivalent to the CEO collaboration day. And it's a 3 months long peer-to-peer advisory board for these entrepreneurs and the executives to get on a board together and have a peer-to-peer mentoring, but on a virtual level, which is going to be more international, so to say, than just based in Zurich, Switzerland.
Wow, that's great. And how can people learn more about what you're up to and follow you?
So the best place to go is to go to leadersbridge.org. That's the main company page. And LinkedIn is a great place. So if you type in Daniel Jordi, select Switzerland, I think I'm probably the first or maybe the only one that pops up.
Sounds great. Well, Daniel, it's been great having you on Smashing the Plateau today, talking about what it takes to be a leader in the conscious economy. So thank you for sharing some of your stories and the details and some action tips for our listeners. My guest today has been Daniel Jordi, Managing Director of leadersbridge.org from Zurich, Switzerland. Thank you again, Daniel, for joining us.
Thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.